people who love them.
Hello, this is Mickey. This is The Thing About Cars, coming to you again from Strongbox West in Atlanta, Georgia. As usual, around the table today we have...
Becca.
Ben.
And our new friend...
Bodie.
Bodie, it's been a long time. We've been talking about getting you at the table for a while. I'm really glad you could join us today. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your interest in cars.
Well, first, thanks for having me on the show. Yeah. I've been looking forward to this for a while myself because I've got a lot of opinions about cars. And so I've had, I grew up just a poor kid in Kentucky. And so if anything needed to be fixed, I had to fix it. Mm-hmm. And so that's where the experience comes from. I never went to any kind of formal training or anything like that. And always loved cars. If you add cars and motorcycles together, I'm definitely way over 100. And
wow.
Which,
wait, 100 at the same time?
No, or? No. Then that's Jay Leno status, you know.
Oh, man.
No. I have a really bad habit of getting something super excited about it, and then after a year, something, you know, catches my eye, and so I swap off.
Dang. So what's in your garage right now?
Right now, I've got a 1988 GMC Jimmy that I am trying to turn into a 24 Hours of Le Mans race car.
Oh, wow.
And but that's while life is happening, and I'm so busy. I've had it for about 2 years now, and it's kind of stagnant. And I'm thinking about bailing on that, actually. And I've got a 1989 Dodge D150. I've recently completely converted to a Mopar man. I love it. And I've got another regular 2500 series Ram truck that I use for all my big heavy work. And I keep going here,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, yeah.
I got a 2014 CB1100 Honda. It's my dream bike forever. I got a couple four-wheelers.
So you got your dream bike.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got it, and I love it. And what's crazy is the older I get, the more scared I am to ride. And so literally, I've only ridden it this whole year, maybe 3 or 4 times. And but I just can't get rid of it because it's going, you know, I'm going to be that guy that's 70 years old, shows up at bike night with a super
right
cherry,
on, man.
Cherry
right on.
Old bike that, you know.
I love it. Well, that's cool. So let's do our trivia question real quick, and then we're going to dive into our agenda. Our trivia question is, true or false, the term doozy originates from Duesenberg, the now defunct car company that some say produced some of the finest cars ever. Have we done this one before?
No. I don't think mm-hmm. we have, no.
So again, true or false, the term doozy originates from Duesenberg. And we'll revisit that at the end of the show. And the first thing on the board today is, I think this one's Ben's. Ben wrote, why are so many drivers bad at reverse? And what can we do about it?
Why are so many drivers bad at absolutely everything?
Well, true, but this is about reverse in this case. and I noticed it on the way down here, a guy who was trying to make too sharp a turn probably than what he had set himself up for and had to back up a little bit and correct it. But it's something I've noticed out and about that, you know, a lot of people, when they put it in reverse, are afraid to turn their wheels more than about 10 or 15 degrees. They don't look over their shoulders enough. They just kind of turn it a little bit and say, oh, I hope this is going to work. And they wind up doing 88-point turns to get out of parking spaces and things like that, or getting into, you know, jammy little situations.
The 88-point turn, yes.
Yeah, there was this one hipster in a full-size Chevy cargo van who I had to ground guide once because he couldn't get himself out of where he was parked. And he was basically afraid to look, use his mirrors, look over his shoulders, and turn his frickin' steering wheel.
Well, I think so many people don't even know how to use their mirrors. And it was something that I even demonstrated to my boys not too long ago. So many people have the backup cameras, or there's the old version where, you know, you put your hand on the other headrest and you turn around and do it that way. Well, one of my kids had left his cell phone inside the doctor's office. So I just threw it in reverse and it was not a straight shot. I had to do all this turning and I did it through my mirrors and the boys are just you know, mouths hanging open. I said, you know, people used to be able to do that and use a mirror.
You're speaking to it. An entire generation that has lost the ability to think for themselves in some manners, and we're so used to backup cameras, everything has been made so easy, so they can't even think, well, my head is on a swivel.
I don't blame the camera, because in a lot of cases I've found them very helpful and useful, especially with a lot of modern design cars that don't have as good rear visibility.
Well, let me ask a question, though. Is this rural versus city?
I don't think so.
Well, you tell me. I'm from Roswell, so it was probably a little more rural back then. We used to have cows.
You don't have a little country in you?
Oh, I got a little country in me. I got a little bit of rock and roll.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of it with the newer generations, a lot of them would say, this is too hard.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes into the invention of cameras and whatnot. And
there are so many things on cars that are just absolutely not needed. But,
I agree.
You know, I have also been in the situation. I've had vehicles with a backup camera. And it is excellent. It really is. So it's not really knocking that. It's just I'm trying to speak towards the idea that we've had so many things to ease our burdens
mm-hmm.
that we forget that we are very capable of doing things manually. Yeah.
Which leads to the other idea I had, which is it would be cool if somebody could do just like a one afternoon on a weekend. A parking lot course for anybody who wants to learn how to back up like a pro.
Well, they still have defensive driver courses and whatnot. And then if you pay out of the nose, there's a racing one. I can't remember exactly where it's at. But what we've been doing is when people are having difficulty with something, we invent something to make it easier for them. But when I was growing up, if you sucked at something, you practiced till you got it right.
Yeah.
You know, not threw your hands up and started installing new technology.
Right.
Sure.
Well, I mean, that makes me think also that the driver's education courses don't teach people to learn where the limits of the car are.
Probably not.
Right. No.
And I mean the physical limits of the car, not the performance limits of the car.
Right. Well, what I want to do with my kids to try to demonstrate that, and oh my God, how many years do I have before they're driving?
Yeah, I don't know. You'll make it.
I'll make it. I keep telling him, you're not driving any of my cars. Put something, I don't think a pool noodle would be solid enough once you're moving, but just put something on all four corners because...
Curb feelers.
Well, I want something visible so that they are constantly aware, just when they're practicing, a parking lot kind of thing, to understand here's where your four corners are, and you do eventually feel them kind of like a sixth sense. You feel where your corners are if you...
Yeah.
My 17-year-old just recently got his license.
I am so sorry. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right.
More?
I'm doing all right. And luckily, he doesn't have the heavy right foot that I was always cursed with. But he, in order to train him to parallel park, I just set up some cones and everything. And at first, I said, do it until you're perfect at it. Go.
Exactly.
And practice. I just let him screw it up over and over again for about a solid 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally I said, okay, now that you have a feel for it, can I tell you what you're doing wrong? And it really worked out really well. He learned it. And he passed like a 95 on his driver's
Yay!
Test.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because I had a bit of trouble learning to parallel park, and I can remember we lived across the street from a school at the time, and schools probably don't have these anymore, but these metal poles stuck in a tire full of concrete that they'd suspend volleyball nets between, and my mom said, go out and set two of those up, and we'll pretend those are the corners of the cars, and we'll try this over and over till you get it, and it took me forever, but I did eventually master it, and then it wasn't on the test. My mom was furious. She wanted to go down to the license office and wring somebody's neck after all she went through trying to teach me that.
But it's a skill you need to learn.
Yes.
So nobody should be angry. You should learn every aspect regardless.
But they don't learn it. They do not learn it.
Well, that's the thing.
Because whenever they take the test, whenever I took the test way back, you know, I had to parallel park on the street.
Yeah.
Between two cars, you know, and my son. And my daughter, both of them, you know, they're between two cones. Mm-hmm. And they get it in there. It's super easy. It's the biggest parking spot ever. And they get it right in there. And then that's the only time they do it. And they go off and they live their life. And then next thing you know, they're 30 years old and they've never truly learned it.
Hmm.
I got applauded. for my ability to parallel park when I took my test. But strangely enough, for Fulton County, I don't know if it's changed, you don't even go out on the road for your driver's test. You do these various things around a parking lot. And you get a driver's license.
Well, which Bodie's point reminds me that I think it's not a bad idea to have regularly occurring rechecks on your skills.
Absolutely. Right?
So like once every 10 years, maybe you go in and you have to pass another driving skill test.
Well, and I've thought about that. I've thought about that for people of a certain age. Also, they kept allowing my dad to renew his driver's license. He has no business driving a car anymore.
Yeah, it stinks to think about it, but it's true. We're all going to get old, and there are a lot of citizens that
I don't think any struggle. Of us mean to propose such a thing in order to really pick on the elderly or be prejudicial against their skills. But if you have the skills, please be safe on the road. If you don't, then let's find something else to get you around or whatever. This is why one of us needs to run for office.
Oh, I've thought about that.
First thing I'd run on the platform to lower auto insurance.
Oh my goodness, yeah. You'd probably just win on that. It's unconstitutional.
Coming from the insurance industry.
You'd need to do a whole lot of legal reform to make it happen, though.
Yeah. Tort reform would have to precede everything.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Ben, did we cover it? What do we do about reverse driving?
Pretty much. Just practice and learn and try to be good at it.
You know? Or ride the bus.
Yeah. Right. Just get out of a parking lot and play with it.
Let's do Bodie's topic up here, which we wrote up on the board, like or dislike the new Supra/BMW. Bodie, tell us what's on your mind.
It's been, I think, since 1996, sometime around then, the Supra went out of production and everybody wants it back. They've wanted it back for years and years. Well, finally, Toyota has brought us back the Supra. I believe it's going somewhere in the neighborhood of $80,000, but dealers
Hold on a sec.
Yeah. Dealers are taking it upon themselves to jack up the price because of demand. And I've seen it somewhere around $123,000 in cases. What they've done is they've partnered with BMW because they didn't want to spend a lot of money creating a new engine. And BMW didn't want to spend a lot of money creating a new car. So they spent all the money making the engine, and Toyota made the car. And they're sharing the car. The car, I believe it is the Z3, and it only comes in a convertible. That's the BMW version. And the Supra is, well, the Supra. But they both share the same drivetrain and pretty much everything that makes the vehicle work. And me, I'm crushed by it. Because the 2JZ was such a fantastic engine that basically, I think everyone would have been happier if they just simply updated that same block. It was outstanding. But on the flip side of it, so is this BMW engine. They built it really, really bulky, and they've done a lot of really cool things. Like, it doesn't even have an exhaust manifold. Hmm. The exhaust manifold is built into the cylinder head. And so that's pretty great. It's also direct injection. So there is literally a hole between the two valves, and you've got about 1,000 PSI of fuel pressure on that thing, and it is directly injecting the fuel right into the cylinders. It's not going through the intake valves. So it's pretty fantastic. What I'm afraid of is Toyota, you know, the old stuff and the new stuff, and, you know, you can go to 200,000 miles without much of a problem. And with all the great design that BMW has, they've yet to like accomplish longevity. and so this Supra, I'm afraid, is going to get it 75,000 miles and then start to have little issues.
Oh, I wish Ronnie was here to weigh in on that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm also thinking about Eric, just with the direct injection and some issues with valve buildup on certain cars, or not valve,
carbon
cylinder.
Buildup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ronnie's a BMW. What is his title exactly?
He was a factory certified technician or something like that. Yeah. Yeah. He has a lot of experience with them.
Yeah. So he would have plenty to say about BMW engines for sure.
Yes. Yes. That's his wheelhouse.
Yeah. You got to wonder, though. I mean, here's how far out of the loop I am. I was not aware that the car was a partnership between Toyota and BMW. Yeah. So I saw the price tag and I'm like, yeah, that's all I need to know.
I mean, it looks fantastic, but in stock form, I think it's only coming out. I think it has about 320 horsepower, which the old Supra.
Wait, that's it?
Yeah.
That's disappointing.
Exactly. But
still more than most people have any clue what to do with.
Exactly.
Truly. But and to BMW's defense, they really did build that engine to where it looks like it should be able to put down LS style horsepower, turbo it, and have 1,000 horsepower, and it still be reasonably reliable.
LSs cannot both have that much horsepower and be reasonably reliable.
Oh, I beg to differ.
No. Oh, I will sell you a car. I've got a car to sell you. Wait, don't tell him. Don't
Sit
tell
back,
him.
Watch the battle that's about to unfold. You know, there's clearly a lot of buzz about the Supra. There are people out there who already love it, and then there are people out there who already hate it. And yet, I haven't seen a single one on the road yet.
No. Mm-hmm. And you probably won't for a few more months. I don't know. This being Atlanta, you might Maybe. Be able to. It's a big
Well, we do get the oddball cars on the road. If it's something you hardly ever see, go to Atlanta or even at this point, Roswell, some areas, and you'll see it.
Well, you know, if anyone out there that is listening and actually drives one of these things, please let us know. Please go to thethingaboutcars.com and give us your feedback on opinions on the Supra. Yeah, Becca.
No, if anybody out there actually owns one, please let us take it for a test drive so we can have an opinion.
Yes.
Or if anybody has an interesting car.
You can't row through the gears.
What?
They don't make a manual.
Wow.
It's paddle shift only. And it's the failure.
How easily modifiable.
Viscerally disappointing. That's,
Well, you know, my first thing I always think of is, what can I change?
Yeah.
How hard is it going to be to get in something and just tear it apart and change it?
Not easy.
Oh, man. Yeah. The more I hear about it, the less I'm like, you know, I'm not even a huge fan of driving a stick. I don't have a daily driver that involves a manual. But it seems like a sports car like that should be completely, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. So, all right. What's next on the board? Bodie, you wrote up there long or short headers. What's that mean?
Oh, well, typically whenever somebody's building a hot rod or something, of course, headers is one of the first two or three things that they do. Mm-hmm. And you also have long headers or you have short headers.
And you have equal length headers,
well,
which is where I would go.
Actually, no, that's completely different. You have long headers or you have short headers.
Mm-hmm.
And within those two genres, you have equal length headers or non-equal length. So you still have a separate, very, very short, very compact package, or very, very long.
You're, just to be clear for the uneducated, you're talking about a header as being the thing that bolts to the side of the engine and goes all the way under the car towards either a cat or a muffler, correct?
Yes, it hooks up to your actual exhaust system. It's part of your exhaust system, but it's kind of considered different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it replaces the exhaust manifold. So you either look down at the bottom of your engine and see something flatter-ish, or you see tubes coming out.
Well, that's basically. That's fair. Yeah.
And again, for those of us who don't know, headers more free-flowing, which means less restrictions on the engine, which means arguably the engine is performing a little bit better with an actual header as opposed to a manifold, which sometimes restricts the exhaust gases from leaving the engine. So, All right. So again, because here's where I get to be uneducated. I didn't know that long headers versus short headers was a thing. I just thought you did headers.
Typically, people, whenever they're building an engine, they immediately want to go after that long header. But most of your vehicles that you're building up and you're having this fun ride and you're enjoying this customization process, well, you're driving it back and forth to work. You're driving it in town and everything, and you're never getting above 5,000 RPMs.
Or for American cars, 3,000 RPM.
And so, if you talk about the import cars, they pretty much are all short headers, like all of them, you know. But with the big V8s, if you're not doing drag runs, and if you're even still with that, if you're not stretching it out to 6,000 RPMs or higher, then there's no use for a long header because they – what they do is they build power at the upper, from mid to upper RPM range, whereas your short header is going to be snappy off the line and create good power right off the line.
On the low end.
Yep, on the low end, right up the line to your 4,500, 5,000 RPM range.
And that's what I was going to say. Whichever one you choose really has to do with, you know, your application, your end goals, what do you want it to do, and that.
Yeah, but I've seen it so many times. You're absolutely right. The problem is that everybody thinks they want to build this crazy high RPM drag machine, or and it's like you even whenever you're hot riding it. I mean, how often do you go above 5,000 RPMs? You just don't do it.
How often is there a blank area on the traffic or on the highway anymore?
Oh.
No cops, no cars. Well, then.
Well, I kind of live out in the country, so
that's a benefit.
Right. But and you know, if you had an import, you're completely right. And then, you know, a lot of the American cars, four cylinders and stuff, they build their power. Some of them don't even start building their power really until about 7,000 RPMs. So it's completely different ballgame. This is a question that's basically for V8s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just for V8s.
Yeah.
Ben, are you going to put long headers or short headers on the Lotus?
Well, yeah, I don't really know which one they are, but there are some sets available.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was just being facetious, but hey.
Well, I mean, yeah, this is a little, you know, 1.6 liter four cylinder with pretty technologically primitive by today's standards. You know, it's based on a 1950s English Ford engine,
right?
But there are some performance exhaust systems available for it. I think most of them are probably about the same header wise because they want to focus this engine to, you know, basically have most of its power mid range.
But you've also got a lot of room in your engine compartment. So you
actually
No.
Compared to some of the ones that I've looked at, I can see light under there. So.
Well, yeah. Well, the big thing is there's the frame is right next to the engine. Basically, the way this car is framed, it's got a steel backbone. It's a fiberglass body sitting on a steel backbone. And at the front, that backbone splits into like a big letter Y that the engine sits in the middle of. And so one side of that Y comes pretty close to the exhaust system on that side.
You don't want to notch your frame for your exhaust pipe.
Actually, that is acceptable.
Is it?
Yeah.
Or wrap a tube around it. It can be the new curly headers.
Right.
So my takeaway from this is we need to go to Bodie's house to drive some of his eight cylinders in the country.
where there's open road.
Where there's open road, yeah.
Come on. I'm having a big party first week of December.
Very
cool. Sounds good.
So the advantage or the disadvantage is whether you want a low-end gain or a high-end gain.
Right. And the only reason I wanted to bring it up is because of so many people just not knowing how to modify their engine to complement itself in the pieces, the bits and pieces that you put in there.
Right. Definitely. Definitely. Mm-hmm.
So if I have a pretty stout engine already, that's already pretty good on the low end, then maybe I don't need short headers on it. Is that what you're saying?
Well, you could look at it that way, but I just keep going back to the RPM thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't ever want to rev to the moon because that breaks things.
Right.
And if you're wanting to do that, then you have to significantly beef up your valve train and possibly get it the entire engine balanced and blueprinted and things like that. It just, if you are planning to go above 6,000 regularly, then you have to build that engine like a race engine.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's like, it's a whole different ball game at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're running out of time with this episode. I think we should take this opportunity to answer our trivia question for the day. What did we decide we were calling this segment? Trivia Auto?
Yeah, the last time.
Grand Trivial Auto. So the question was, true or false, the term doozy originates from Duesenberg, the now defunct car company that some say produced some of the finest cars ever. Becca, true or false?
You know, I don't know. I used to work for a company where the owners were the Duesenbergs, and there was often talk about the cars and there were pictures of them, but no one ever related that. It sounds feasible, but just because of that, I'm going to say false.
All right. Bodie, what do you think? True or false?
I got to say, absolutely true, because those cars were amazing, and I can completely seeing them becoming at that time sort of pop culture slang. You know, ooh, she's a doozy.
Sure,
that's the real deal.
Yeah, I kind of agree.
Ben, you thinking it's true?
Yeah.
The connotation with doozy is almost, and I know the meaning of words changes. from generation to generation, but it's almost a negative connotation nowadays, where you would think if you would say, well, like, he's giving me a look. Like, if somebody makes a mistake, that's a doozy of a mistake kind of thing.
Well, I mean,
you know what I'm saying?
Well, but you're still pushing for emphasis, whether it's positive or negative.
That would be big.
It's still a superlative. And they were, right. Yeah. It's still
a, well, that's another word.
Were huge.
That's another phrase that I'm not going to say on the air.
All right. So the answer is, Doozy was first recorded in the form Dozy in Eastern Ohio in 1916, 4 years before the Duesenberg Motor Company began manufacturing cars. So the answer is false.
Yay!
Fascinating.
Separating Doozy from the fancy cars even more is the even older adjective Doozy, meaning stylish or splendid. That work dates back to 1903. Etymologists believe doozy is an alteration of daisy, which at one time was used to mean a first-rate person or thing. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a daisy of an etymology. So,
kind of like here in the South where something is the peach of a something.
Exactly.
You're a peach of a guy.
So the word doozy has nothing to do with the Duesenberg car company. But, so that's our moment of grand trivia, Otto. Anything else we need to cover before we wrap up this episode? No,
not really.
Thanks, as always, for joining us. If you like what we do or want to help us improve things, please find us at thethingaboutcars.com. And your support via our Patreon is very much appreciated. In the meantime, stay safe out there. We'll see you in about a week.
Bye.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.